We're here at the MSS Business Transformation Institute podcast. I'm David Lee. It's always a benefit when I actually say my name. I'm the executive director here, and today we have a very special guest, somebody I've been waiting to have on this for a long time, a really long time, a really long time. Mindy Weinstein is the founder and CEO of Marketing Mindshift. She's also a marketing professor at GCU. She is a guru in digital marketing. We're going to define what that actually means here today as part of this. And she has trained companies to do this, companies of all sizes. She's also the author of three books, Marketing Adventures, Rich and Thin, Slim Down, Shrink Debt, and Turn Calories into Cash, and Money Tremble, Surviving Your Financial Crisis. Welcome, Mindy.
Thank you for having me.
Now, it says you train companies of all sizes.
I have.
What do you mean by all sizes?
I know, which is very vague. I have trained, literally trained the solopreneur, so he or she is the only one, you know, in the company that's running everything, all the way to companies that are significant, very large companies you would know, like Facebook. I've trained Facebook. I've trained the Weather Channel. I could go on and on with the list, but it's always fun to have the different size groups because, you know, people have different objectives and different things that they want to learn. And it's all digital marketing.
All digital marketing. So can we define for a second what digital marketing means?
Absolutely. That's a good question because a lot of people define it differently. And the way that I look at it as it's the technology you could use online to reach your customers. And that's my simple way of explaining it, but I want to make it clear that when we say digital, it is online. And, you know, back in the day, it was web marketing, then that's not cool anymore. And then it's internet marketing, and then that's not so cool. And so now it's digital marketing. Who knows what it's going to be?
Everything's digital.
Everything's digital because that just sounds amazing. And so that's what it is now. But that's how I defined it. But it's using the things, the platforms that are available to you. So, of course, you have the search engines, you have social media. There's so many paid platforms that you can use. There's email marketing. Now, even with text, I mean, that's part of mobile marketing, but that still falls within the umbrella. So there's quite a bit that goes into it.
Okay, well, I'm going to stop just for a second because I want to also mention the fact that you're the person who brought us Jessica.
Ooh.
Who runs our digital marketing.
Yay.
And is teaching us digital marketing, and she's here. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Jessica is amazing. Yes.
Well, here's the thing. So when we defined digital marketing for her originally, it was you're going to do our social media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you started. Mm-hmm. Is that all you do now?
No, not just social media, no.
What else do you do?
A lot. Digital marketing is more than just a social aspect. I think it's like content, thinking about different ways that we can reach our clients, personas, PR. So it's a lot under what we do.
Oddly enough, it's actually led to you being in charge of our content too, including podcasts.
Yes.
And getting us good guests like Mindy. And things like that. So, I mean, it's really evolved for us into what it means. Is that a typical path?
That is very typical. And a lot of people, too, when they think about digital marketing, they think of one aspect of it. They might only think of their website, which your website is your hub. But just as you've been alluding to, content is what drives it all. And content, that's text, you know, so the actual words, but that's what we're doing right now, a podcast, that's content. Video is content. Images are content. And all of that, when you put together a strategy and you're building your brand and your messaging and you're pushing it out to the right people, and so that's even where social comes in. You're pushing it out to people. There's just so much that goes into it. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. So they just scratch the surface. They're like, I understand Facebook, so I'll just stay with Facebook. Mm-hmm. Or I understand this part. I'm just going to pay Google for ads. But there's just so much. And choosing what you're going to do is going to depend on your audience.
So posting puppies on Facebook isn't digital marketing?
Actually, it is. It is. Right. Everyone loves puppies and babies. And so, and I even joke that.
And then puppies and babies.
Right, right. I do, I speak at a lot of conferences, and that's my big joke is in my presentation. A good presentation, it comes down to a picture of a cute kid. And there's somewhere, and a puppy somewhere. You do that and you win.
Yep.
Okay, maybe you have to have good content too, but that always helps you.
Okay, well, I've got a question because I think people tend to think of this as a free way or a cheap way of doing marketing. Is that the right way to approach it, or how do you approach it in terms of budgeting for something like this, or make the portion of budgeting you spend on marketing, whether you're doing marketing at all?
No, that's a good question. And that's something that does come up a lot is, you know, a lot of businesses are accustomed to traditional where there's a price tag on if I want to run this ad on the radio, it's going to cost me this amount of money, or I'm going to do a commercial and the airtime is this. Mm-hmm. And so I think that then when it comes to digital, it's like this people don't understand. It's almost like a black hole, just like a mystery. They've heard about it. But to do a great job with digital marketing, it's more time and expertise than anything. So if you have the time and you have the expertise that you understand it, you've taken the time to know search engine algorithms, which most people don't, but let's say you are one of those people, you're into that, you're into social media, then it's not as much of a cost monetary for you, but it is going to be your time and expertise. However, most people have a business to run and they have other jobs to do. And so this is like one area, and that's where, you know, you are going to have a cost. I look at it as an investment, of course, you know, from the marketing side, you're going to put money into digital marketing, but the idea is that you're going to have a return. You're going to get the customers. And what I even like about it too, is you're going to get the customers that want to hear your message. You know, one of the things that comes up a lot with digital marketing is inbound. So you might have heard that, inbound marketing. Mm-hmm. And that's because you're pushing out content and then people find you. They're coming to you. You know, you can put them in your sales funnel versus you're trying to yell your message at them.
Right.
Which I am saying that with like a billboard or things. And those are all good things. Like I am still a firm believer in traditional, but with digital, it's so targeted. So you do have to put, again, if you have the time and the expertise, great, then you can be a do-it-yourselfer. If you're like the majority of people, then it's something that you want to invest in.
Is a lot of people think it just comes down to blogging. And we get that all the time. So, well, we need to have a blog. And then they hire somebody to write snippets of things so that they can get search engines to pay attention to them. I've rejected that, but try and break that myth. Because when you think about all the things that you could be doing to get your voice out there, and people just resort to blogging, that just seems like it's not a starting point.
Right. And that's more old school mentality, you know, for the people who finally did buy into the fact that, like, oh, I guess I need a website. Oh, I guess I must do this thing called blogging that I've heard about. But blogging is powerful because it's content, like we just talked about, creating that content. But it has to be so strategic because, let's face it, most businesses now are pushing out content. They're pushing out blog posts. And if you're just now, you know, you're jumping on the bandwagon too, you're already behind. So it's more than that. It's what strategically should I be creating that's going to resonate with my target audience, answering their questions, touching their pain points, really getting inside their head in a way. And that's, you can still blog and blog is great, but that's where you have to take it to the next level. And it wasn't always that way. I mean, in the past, like when I got started in 2007, at that time I was even shocked that there was a position where you could write for websites. Like, people pay for that? Like, what in the world? And then back then it was like, well, let's just put together some paragraphs and throw in some words people might search and we're gold. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not now. I mean, one, the search engines have evolved significantly. So it's all about intent. What's the intent when someone searches, and does your content address that intent? And then on the flip side, again, what is the user going to be looking for? And because of voice search, which I could just go on about voice search,
Define voice search.
So voice search, I mean, that's talking into your phone, you know, talking to Siri, that's talking to
Alexa
or Google Home or all these different devices that we talk to. It's, I feel like it's like Star Trek now. Like we can even talk to our computers and, but that's how we search. So it's very rare that if I'm going to, let's say, purchase a pair of shoes, I'm never going to go on Google and put in shoes. Back in the day, that's what you would have done. And you might have found someone's great page and their great blog. But now it's, you're very specific. I'm looking for a pair of shoes in this color and this size and this material. And so that goes back to intent. So searchers have evolved. Search engines have evolved. And so blogging's part of it, but it has to be strategic. And so when I work on content, because that's still part of what I do, you spend so much time understanding personas, which mm-hmm. Jessica is one of the things you talked about. So if you first have to understand that user, which goes back to like traditional marketing, right? Where it's, hey, let's do our market research. Let's, you know, figure out our consumers. Let's identify.
We actually want to know who buys this stuff.
Right? Yeah, let's find out. And then taking it a step further is we all have our favorite customers and clients. Let's write to them, like get more of them, you know, because we know what they're looking for. We know what they talk about. That's how our content should be structured. So it's, you know, first creating your personas, knowing what questions people search, what keywords. And keywords are simply the words and phrases that people look for on Google.
What's the difference between a persona and just doing target marketing?
Target marketing. So in actually, I always look at it as similar as market segmentation because it's very similar. But personas, what's a little bit different about it is you are getting to the nitty-gritty details. Like, there's persona tools you can even use where you have a picture of this person, the stranger, you know, from stock photo, and you've named them. Like, my favorite one is, like, Moneymaker Mary. You know, this is Moneymaker Mary, and she
is... We have Changemaker Charlie.
Right, there you go. And you get into their demographic information, mm-hmm. But the psychographic information, but you just start to describe that person. Okay, they're this approximately this age, likely in this job. They have, you know, 2.5 kids. No, that one always makes me laugh because I don't know how you have a half a kid, but, you know, I guess
you're
it
sharing
could
have, with a neighbor.
Right, sharing with a neighbor. But you get to the nitty-gritty, and it makes your campaigns come more alive. And so when you take the time to actually create something like that, and I love that you have them, mm-hmm. then when you're creating a blog, because still blogging's still good. It's just not the only thing. Or you're creating.
We call them articles.
Articles.
I hate blogging. Right. I hate the whole term,
blogging.
To me, that implies something short with very little value.
That's
in
true.
It. That's
true.
So when we publish very intently, we publish, you know, full articles, but right. nothing more than 3 pages. But full articles, and the whole idea is that there's some credibility behind it. There's some value behind it. There's some instruction behind it. It's not just, oh, I'm, you know, look at this, keyword, keyword, keyword.
But right? That's because you're writing to your personas. With what you described, that's perfect, because your personas are going to want to read that longer form content, which is great. But then you might have a different demographic, a different group, different personas for a whole nother service or product. And if you write more than 2 paragraphs, they're gone. You know, I mean, so it just really depends on who you're going after. So that's a big thing. And then also what's considered, so there's the... So I apologize, and I get really passionate. So I'm like going to bounce here and bounce over here.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're talking about the users. But online, we care about the search engines too. I'm not even going to talk about social yet. Just talking about the search engine. So when we are creating that content, if Google can't find and index that content, then it doesn't matter. We can have an amazing article, and someone's not going to find it if they search. And so when you are creating that content and you're trying to decide, is it 3 pages? Is it something really short and sweet? The blogging. Maybe I'll stay away from that word for you.
No,
when you're writing for a website, you also need to look at what does Google consider to be natural for that topic. And there's tools that can help you with that, that you find that, gosh, the top 10 pages that are showing up for this particular topic, they're all, you know, they're all about 1,000 words. I'm not going to write something that's 300, because Google's going to say, like, whoa, wait a minute, you're not in the norm. You know, think statistics. Think about normal distribution.
Amazing. Google's really controlling our life at this point.
Google controls our life, yes. I used to say Google was going to take over the world, but it could be Amazon.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be Amazon, but it's okay. I like Amazon. I like Google, so I'm good either way.
So you talked a little bit about strategic, like writing everything with a certain strategy behind it. And I'm kind of wondering... in order to be strategic, you have to, like, know what makes you different in the market and know what kind of sets you apart. So how does that tie into, like, positioning and messaging? Like, is that kind of like the foundation before you become strategic, because you're like, this is my strategy, this is my differentiation point? Like, how does that kind of tie together?
They can go together. So with what I was talking about with strategy and, like, determining what are people going to be looking for, a lot of that you know as an organization because you're talking to your customers and your clients, you know, so you already have a feel.
There's a big assumption there.
Well, I know.
For most companies, that's a big assumption, I'll be honest. Yeah.
So let's hope.
Assume somebody's talking to their customers.
Let's hope you are. If you're not, then there's your first takeaway, huge takeaway is talk. Especially the ones that you love, because if we want more of those particular clients.
Listen to them and actually pay attention to what they're saying.
Listening is huge. Yeah. And so going back to your question, you know, once you realize, like, what are those topics that are really going to drive in the right kind of clientele that we want, you can still bring in your positioning. All of that is weaved into the content.
Right.
So, like, if you have certain brand guidelines or certain, you know, verbiage you use or, you know, whatever it might be, that is always apparent, mm-hmm. you know, in your articles that you're creating. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it's weaved through there. And the way that I like to look at content too, so from a strategy side, again, you look at what are people wanting to know, and I'm going to address that. And the biggest thing, because I hear from a lot of companies after a while, they're like, I know I need to create these articles. Notice that I'm not saying blogs. I know I need to create these articles, but I don't know what else to write, you know, and they kind of get stuck on that. And my response is, you are the expert. You have information that I don't have. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it that you can share and that you're willing to share? And my experience when it comes to digital marketing, the more generous you are with your expertise and information, actually the more business you get. And I feel like some people are, some businesses are like, well, I don't want to tell them everything because then they don't need me.
I've heard it. I don't want to give up the secret sauce in the article and then let them go do it themselves.
Well, most people, and that's also my experience with speaking, because as a speaker, I decided early on, like, I want to be one of those speakers that I'll tell you everything. I'm not going to keep something in my back pocket, be like, here's how you do it. Huh, just kidding. You know, that's really this. But you have the people that are like, immediately it's, they look at you as the expert, but they want to hire you because, yeah, you told them how to do it, but they're like, okay, that's a lot. You know, you're the expert. I'd rather you do it. And so, I mean, I would even say as you're working on strategy and the positioning and all your expertise is don't be afraid to share it. Be generous. Be generous.
Mm-hmm. Let's say, okay, so we produce a lot of content, or a company produces a lot of content. Great. We know who our persona is. We're producing a lot of content, but there's other people out there doing that too. Mm-hmm. I do a search for something. Yeah, they happen on, I'm on the third page of Google. You know, how do I get to the first one that shows up that they actually pay attention to? Is it just the quality of the content, or are there other strategies that come in to say, all things being equal, this will get you over the top?
Right, no, and that's search engine optimization, so absolutely. And I will say that the only people who go past page one are when you're looking for your own site, like you just described. No one goes past unless you're trying to figure out where you are. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, like, you start with I'll just tell you how it works. So if you're going to write about a topic.
Wait, give them time to get a piece of paper.
I know, get a piece of paper. This is the secret sauce right here that most people don't understand. Going back to what I just touched on briefly, if you say, okay, I want to write about this particular topic, before you write about that, go to Google, and I would encourage you to do an incognito search, which some of you are like, you lost me already. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is use Chrome or Firefox. That's like, I won't get on the soapbox, but use one of those. But you use Chrome and click on, there's a little button where it says incognito mode.
There is? I never use that.
So what that's going to do is Google is already tracking you. They're tracking your location. They're tracking your history. And it's impossible to get rid of all of that, but incognito will at least eliminate some of that. So what you're going to do is you're going to do the search for that topic and look at the top like 10 sites, 10 pages that are showing up. And read them. How long are they? So again, going back to if they're 1,000 words, well, it doesn't mean you're going to write the same thing, but you better write close to that number, because if you're out of the norm, Google's going to, their software, you know, they're just analyzing things. They're going to be like, why is this one so far out?
Yeah.
So you start there, like, how long does this need to be? And then you can even look at those pages and see, like, what other terms are they using that's relevant to this topic? Because that's called semantic search. So you put some of those in. And there's tools that can help you with this, but you can also just give it a shot manually. It's not that hard. So then all of a sudden you have a blueprint. Okay, I'm going to write about this topic. I know it needs to be 1,000 words. Here's some other words that those top 10 pages, because understand, if they're top 10, that means Google's rewarding them for a reason. Mm-hmm. So that's how we're going to create our content. But then you're not done. And so the big thing is you're going to write something that is informative. You don't want to just have the same thing as everyone else, but you at least have a target. But once it's created, that's when social media really comes into play, because you start pushing out that content. And the idea is that people read it, people will share it. People might even link back to your article because they think it's so great. And even getting those links back to that article help you with your rankings. And so those are like the core to really getting pages.
But if you're looking on LinkedIn or you're looking on Facebook, whatever, you're seeing hundreds and hundreds of things coming across. Are there tips to get people to actually share? Because that's really how you expand it.
Right.
Is people have to share it, people have to interact with it. Are there tips and tricks that we do that, or is that the secret sauce?
No, I will share. Like I said, I'll share it all. I mean, now with social media, you got to pay to play. I mean, that's the thing. So if you're on Facebook and you're going to share something, let's say that's where your audience is, well, you need to share it and then boost it. You know, and it could be boosted to people who visited your website before, people who've interacted with your page. You can create a custom audience, but that gets tricky. It's not always how you think it is. Mm-hmm. And then even on LinkedIn, you can, you know, pay to have that in front of more people. And so that's one way. The other way, so for Facebook, yes, just you have to pay. Just we'll just like keep that there, right?
It's not that hard. It's really not that expensive.
No, it's not. I mean, you can put, sometimes I only put like $20 towards a boosted post and I'll get a lot of traction from it. Mm-hmm. And it's the aftermath. That's what you're hoping, is that it's not just people see it, but they're like, this is great. They're going to share it. Then they're going to link to your site. I've even known people that ended up with interviews in the media because they're always searching, you mm-hmm. know, and there's that. But then on the LinkedIn side, you can even post it as a question, you yeah. know. People like questions, you know, get the conversation going instead of just talking at people, make it
I've
a discussion.
I've seen people are really provocative. Like they're really trying to get people to react to something.
Right.
And sometimes it's a little bit offensive, mm-hmm. but they do get a lot of attention. I just don't know if it's the right kind of attention.
Right. That's know? What I would say. Is it the right? Because that's where and that depends on your business, you know. I mean, if you're in a business that's more, like your target audience is a little more serious, a little more, you know, whatever it might be.
Not the people that listen to this show.
Well, you got to consider them.
My mom's not that serious. when we look at digital marketing, it's actually only become sort of the only marketing in some cases. But do you see it as, does traditional marketing plan, and I'm talking about like direct mail and, you know, snail mail type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you see that playing into this, or is that dead?
That's a good question. And that's always the big debate, is traditional versus digital. And even though I live and breathe digital, they work together. And the best campaigns that I've worked on, it's because the marketing department also had traditional going on, and then we were able to build the digital presence. Because in your example, what's going to happen if you get a letter in the mail and you are interested? What's mm-hmm. going to be the first thing that you do?
Look it up.
You're not going to call them, right? You're going to look it up. You're mm-hmm. absolutely going to look it up. Same thing, you're driving down the road. Well, okay, that's a bad one. You're sitting listening to the radio. Let me rephrase that. And you hear a commercial and you're like, I am interested in that product or service. Again, you're going to go online and you're going to check them out. And even more so if it's
and
a product.
And don't do that while driving.
Don't do it while
that's
driving.
That's the message here.
Right. Pull over. And then the thing with that is most people too, not only are they going to look at that brand, they're probably going to look up that brand plus reviews, you know, mm-hmm. or that product and then the word review or rating right after it. And so that's part of digital marketing, is what is your presence? What's your digital footprint? What do people find when they search your brand name? And I'm surprised that I will pose that question to businesses and it's like the deer in the headlights of like, I don't know what shows up. Well, you better know what shows up. That's huge, because that's credibility. You got to at least own that first page in search results for your brand name.
Right.
And then if there's reviews, you know what's there.
The review, okay.
That's a whole nother.
Reviews, well, I don't know. Do we want to go down that path? Because I really have a thing about reviews. Mm-hmm. And it's whether there's the reviews that are of your product or your service, there's the reviews of your company. Mm-hmm. I know that I've been in the travel industry, so I know if I look at websites that do travel reviews, I'm not going to plug any here, but they do travel reviews. There are people who really like an experience. They will come out and do it. But I find in most cases, it's really just people who had a negative experience, mm-hmm. and the positive experiences don't shine through. But this is the question. As a company, what is the ethics behind making sure that there's positive stuff out there that's countering that?
So, okay, another great question. So you can't control what people are going to say. And Google has made it, Google and Yelp and all the different sites, I mean, you can't control, like, I'm only going to ensure that good reviews come through. What becomes important is just monitoring what's going on. And you can even set a Google alert for your brand name or your products. So that let's say someone did leave a bad review somewhere. Well, if you just sit back and you don't respond to it, that looks really bad. Respond to it. And you don't respond to it. And I've seen the ones where, you know, they're throwing like gas in the fire. You don't want to have an argument in review, like responses. But just like, hey, I'm sorry, that was your experience. We'd love to talk with you. That is not our goal. And you just address it and then encourage people to reach out to you. But on the flip side, let's say you get a good review, you do the same thing. Like, I'm so glad you had, you know, a positive experience with our company. That's great to hear. But it's important to keep an eye on it, because otherwise, if you sit back, and I have worked with companies that have contacted me, and it was almost too late. I mean, it was like, you look them up, and it's just bad review, bad review, bad review. And they're in a service industry, business to business. And so if you ignore it, it's hard to undo it later. And so you at least have to know what's going on. You mm-hmm. can't control it. You can encourage your clients to leave you reviews, and you do want to encourage it. You know, that's something. There's platforms that can help you with that, just in terms of sending out emails, you know, like with a link and things. There's enough tools available. But the other thing that I want to mention, and it's still on that same note, and a lot of people don't know this, but in Google, you know, businesses have a listing. So your business will have a listing even though you might be a national company. It's considered a local listing. Your headquarters is what's going to be listed. So you always want to make sure that you claim that, manage it, update it. That's like old news, right? That's been around for a long time. What's fairly new is that Google has implemented a Q&A function within the Google My Business, very similar to how when you're on Amazon and someone can ask a question about a product. So here's the deal. This is the catch, and most companies don't know this, is that anyone can ask a question, you know, on Google, and it shows up in search results as someone searches your brand, and anyone can answer it.
Oh, yeah.
So that means that someone who doesn't know the answer can go ahead and answer it for you. Or if they're angry about something, like the answer is going to be like, what? Like, that doesn't make sense. And it's scary because most people don't know that exists. Yeah. And it's very kind of like quiet. Google didn't make a big deal about it. But the good news from a business perspective is that you can actually, as the business owner, post questions and you can post the answer. The only thing you have to do to make it show up in search results is you click the thumbs up button. You like your own. I mean, really, for right now, that's as simple as it is, but that's another easy, easy tip for everyone. Because if you don't own that, I'm pretty sure that's going to continue to grow. I don't think it's going to go away.
Well, it's like politicians stalking the audience. I mean, I used to be in political campaigns, and you never had a question come from the audience down hall that you didn't control. Okay, so we're the Business Transformation Institute. So we can't just leave it out there as a topic and say, do digital. Obviously, people need to do digital marketing.
Right.
We have to talk about not just that this exists and how to do it, but how does it change an organization? I know from personal experience, but I'm going to let you talk to it. But I know from personal experience that how you do your digital marketing and how you get your message out this way can change a lot of how you operate as a company. Have you had that experience, and do you have examples?
Yeah, I mean, so just in general how it changes, when you are involved in digital marketing, you have a very strong presence. So someone searches for a service or they're looking up a question and all roads lead back to you, all of a sudden you must be an authority. So there's a perception there. Let's say you create videos and you're giving information, because again, it's all about the information. You have to be real careful. It's not sales, it's information. It's being generous, it's sharing your expertise. But people see those by the time they pick up the phone and call you, because that goes back to inbound, they already trust you. You're already credible to them. It's a whole different experience for your sales team, for you, for really everyone involved. And so as an example, I know one service professional that he's a lawyer, and so he's doing all these videos, and people would hire him just based on his videos because they said, well, I feel like I can trust you. So it's even that like non-threatening environment where you can sit back and watch the video and decide, do I want to work with this person or not? You know, and a lot of us are in service industries. I am. I mean, I hear that personally. And usually my first question is, well, which video was it? And no one ever knows. Like, there's some I like better than others that are out there. Don't look them up. There's ones. And so you just wonder, but I hear that a lot. Like, well, I really liked what you had to say. And, you know, you really seemed like you knew what you're talking about. And so it's just a different experience because I feel like it's just showcasing you are the authority, you are the expert, you are credible without you having to just, you know, keep throwing sales materials at them.
Well, I think it also helps you hone your message to the client, because if you're going to go out there and publicly say these things, people tend to focus on their message a lot better, a lot more, and then they tend to look and say, is that actually what I do? Because when they call you and you've been saying these things, you better be the expert, because that credibility can disappear very quickly.
Right.
But what I've noticed is that it actually starts to flow all the way back into the organization and says, okay, how do we launch products? Because we call it eating the whole animal. So every step we take towards whatever the digital message is, or to the release, is designing how we're going to release that product. But it actually sometimes even plays into the product design itself, because we're a content-oriented organization.
Right.
So I think it can change the nature of your company sometimes.
I would agree with you. So what you're saying too is that it could change what direction even you go with your products and services. Am I understanding? I mean, because it can even do that as well, because you're able to see, you're able to engage and get interaction right away. I mean, you could test out ideas too if you've got a strong base.
And I've seen that a lot too, where people, okay, so now I don't mean to take over the
conversation. No, go ahead. That's what.
But so I've had some experience lately buying things. So I'm on YouTube, and I Okay, so I'll just go into it. I'm being annoying because I just bought a car. And everything I'm doing in my life, I start to relate back to what we're doing in business. But I researched that car on YouTube. I listen to every review on that. I have a playlist for that car so that I can go back and do the reviews. The guy, when I picked it up, he says, I'm going to show you all the features on the car. By the time we were into it, I was showing him the features on the car. I knew everything about it. And so if companies, companies now when they're launching things, they have to think about who are our advocates mm-hmm. out there. How are we going to present this? And how are we going to make sure that they have the information they need to advocate? See what I'm getting there yet?
Right. No, absolutely. I would agree. That's a big thing is getting the information out there. And then even with the example that you were saying, a lot of businesses now too, when they have a product or some type of service, they'll even have videos that are informational or videos that answer the questions that people are going to ask that they already know. So just like you described, by the time they're already at that position where they're ready to buy, they're ready to hire, you've already educated them the entire way. I mean, again, and it just changes that whole sales process and gets them in a different place too.
And you were saying earlier that when we were talking is that people can actually use social media in terms of how they launch projects, not social, digital mm-hmm. marketing, social media on how they launch projects to see how people respond to it.
Exactly. Well, and that's a big thing. And that's what also makes digital marketing different. And it talking about transformation, I mean, it is transforming businesses and it's going to continue to do so because there's so much data available and that's just going to continue to grow. But businesses can get immediate feedback. It's different than, hey, I'm going to test, I have a new product, I'm going to see if people are interested, I'm going to put in an ad in a magazine. Well, I mean, how long is that going to be until you get to decide, like, does it work or not? Well, hey, I'm going to push it out, on a social media ad, or I'm going to, do some paid advertisements on Google or Bing. You can see right away, are people biting? And then not only that, are they clicking on your ads, but then you can see, like, when they get to my page, are they continuing through the funnel? Mm-hmm. And so then at that point, you realize, do I need to make changes? And really, it saves money. I mean, it does, in my opinion, because now you're avoiding that whole learning curve. Do we need to make a change? Maybe it's a change in our messaging. Maybe it's a change in the product or the service, whatever that might be.
And you can experiment. You can say, mm-hmm. which one responded fast? Which did people respond faster to? I mean, you can't do this if you're manufacturing a big product. But if you're doing a service, you could mm-hmm. say, I don't know which path I'm going to go. I can put this out, see how people respond to it. I can put this out, see how people respond to it.
Yeah. So. What I'm seeing actually really, and this is kind of one on the topic of advocates, I see a lot with B2C like companies when they do like social media mm-hmm. influencers, so people that they partner with to kind of build that credibility for them already. Is there kind of like a B2B equivalent of that, or is it more like expertise and just having the right partners and things like that?
So I would say, so B2B, it is different because you're not going to necessarily be looking at the social influencers. It's who's influential in the business world. But for B2B, it's the signals, it's trust. I already said authority and credibility. And so with your website is your hub. So understand that. So what I'm about to tell you, it's going to involve your website, but that's your hub. And so you create these great social messages, paid ads. The idea is you're going to drive people back to your website. Mm-hmm. Where in a business to business world, that's where you have those signs of credibility immediately on whatever page they got to, whether that's logos of companies you've worked with, because then all of a sudden it's, okay, they've also worked with these companies. They're trustworthy. Mm-hmm. Or let's say that it's results that you got and you have those clearly stated. Oh, okay, they're good at what they do. Mm-hmm. They're an expert. And then even like if there's, I mean, anything like that that you can showcase, that is where, to me, like my experience with business to business, that's how you convert. Mm-hmm. People are going to come there, but they're going to convert because they see those signals. And then even testimonials. You don't want to overdo any of it because then that's kind of like obnoxious, right? But if you have like three testimonials on the page too, so then again it's that social proof that hey, these are other people that have hired them, and right. So I feel a little bit more comfortable now.
Yeah And I definitely see people kind of either doing the building the credibility on their website or like going through like the content, like this is how I'm going to build credibility, mm-hmm. like this is the content that I'm offering you, and it's valuable to you. And so I know that that's mm-hmm. kind of two different ways of approaching it, but that does kind of tie back together.
Right. Okay. No, and then even with the going back to the content side, if you are giving that information that's showing that, mm-hmm. and you're here's the deal too. It's consistency. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, I'm going to create an article this month and like 6 months go by and you're like, oh, you know what? I remember one time on a podcast, I heard this lady talking about content and I probably should add another one. Like, it needs to be consistent. So whatever that you've determined consistency is for mm-hmm. you on social and with your website, then people will continue to read and continue to read. And I have stories of clients that even with their email newsletter, they're like, these people, they don't respond. We didn't know. And then like, down the road, they're like, oh, I read it every single month, and I'm at the point now I want to hire you or I want to buy from you. And so it's just that it's consistent, that being in front of them and showing your expertise too, so you get a following.
Cool.
So we only have a few minutes left, but I wanted to catch into something because that you said earlier, you mentioned it, which is the future mm-hmm. with Internet of Things, all the data that's going to become available. By the way, my car emailed me and told me I had parked it wrong.
Okay.
All right. So it's starting to get to the point where there's so much right. information flowing and there's all this instantaneous contact and they're going to know everything about all this type of stuff. So when you think of the future of digital marketing, how do I, as a business owner, let's say like a small, mid-sized company, how do I prepare for that future?
No, that's good. And I mean, it can get overwhelming and you're going to get a lot of data that is available to you. I will use actually the example of voice search, and that's what I'm going to base my answer on. So like with voice search, that is something that's here, but it's also something that continues because we have smart devices that we talk into all the time. And like you said, there's all these different devices. The biggest thing is it actually still comes back around to what do I know about my customer, and how we kind of made the joke of people just don't even talk to their customers. But if I can still figure out, I know this person, I know that this is the question that they ask, I know this is the problems they have, even though things will evolve and we'll get all this data, don't always just get stuck on the numbers. You have a human being on the other side. So like with voice search, if I can pinpoint, well, I know they're going to search for this question, even if they're talking to a device with that question, all paths lead to you. And a lot of the way it was done before is like, oh, I have to have this particular phrase. Well, it's not that way anymore. And it's that natural language. So things will evolve. There's going to be a lot of data. But as much as things evolve and transform, it does come back to knowing who you're targeting, which is what we talked about in the very beginning. It all comes back around.
Yeah, you have to know who you're hitting.
Right.
Okay. Well, I think there's going to be a heck of a future in this. You're probably the busiest person I know. It really took us what, 6 months to set this up. But that's because you're so busy teaching this stuff, and there's such a big demand for it. So I really appreciate you coming here. How do people get a hold of you?
So a couple different ways. I mean, I have a website. So my website is marketmindshift.com, and that's part of that is the psychology, because as you can tell, I'm big on the psychology side. So definitely through my website is a way to contact me.
We'll publish the link below.
Yeah, and then also even through LinkedIn, I know I'm active on there, and so I'd love to connect. And my, as you've been able to tell, my passion is teaching what I know, because I'm not going to hold back. I'll tell you everything I know, so much that your eyes might glaze over. Like, you could tell me, like, okay, stop.
I took a nap.
Right, I saw that. So, I mean, but I would love to share my expertise. And so I do a lot of training, a lot of teaching at a lot of conferences. And so...
And hopefully we'll get you to do some stuff through BTI.
I would love to.
BTI in the near future, so be on the lookout for that. Jessica, anything else you want to wrap up with today?
No, this will be up on our social media pretty soon. So LinkedIn, Twitter, we'll have some clips, and then you can download the full one on the website.
See, look, she's just the expert now.
Fantastic. Yes.
And I think the main focus there is that contact Mindy if you need anything. Mm-hmm. If you really want to, you can just take a class at GCU.
You could just take a class, absolutely.
Pay tuition.
Right.
You know.
That's one way.
That's the long way about it. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Jessica, thanks for joining us today. And that's it.